This is Radio Health Journal, a weekly news magazine with the latest in health, medicine, and technology. A closer look at the issues that affect your health and well-being. Prevention, lifestyles, treatments and trends, all from the nation's top experts. I'm Shel Lustig.
I'm Nancy Benson.
I'm Mimi Tompkins.
And I'm Reed Pence. This week, the declining happiness of women.
This is puzzling because it's happening in a period where what we've seen is a shift towards women in terms of legal rights and opportunities.
Then, cosmetic limb lengthening, helping short men get taller by growing new bone.
This procedure is a potentially very dangerous procedure. It can affect your ability to walk, run, do sports.
Then on A Healthier World, complication risk in pregnancy. All that and more this week on Radio Health Journal.
What do you consider success? Psychiatrist Dr. Janet Taylor says it can mean many things.
For people trying to manage bipolar depression, the depressive phase of bipolar disorder, success can mean maintaining relationships with family and friends. It can mean finishing up a degree or sometimes feeling well enough to get out of bed. For some, success is sharing his or her story and being a role model for others. That's why actress Debbie Mazur, who recently appeared on Dancing with the Stars, and I are participating in the Speak and Be Heard Living with Bipolar Depression campaign.
I've had the opportunity to meet caregivers and people living with bipolar depression who inspire others with their stories about managing the disease. This campaign has given me a chance to tell my story. As someone with a close family member with bipolar depression, I know firsthand the importance of receiving an accurate diagnosis and developing a treatment plan with a healthcare provider to successfully manage the symptoms.
Speak and Be Heard, Living with Bipolar Depression is a national campaign sponsored by AstraZeneca. To learn more, visit www.facingbipolar.com.
Back in the 1950s, most women pretty much had a choice of only three careers: homemaker, nurse, or teacher. But surveys showed women were generally happier than men. Since then, things have changed a lot. Virtually any career is open to women. Surveys show they believe they have much more of a chance at success. Yet women are much more unhappy than they were in the early 1970s, while men are just about as happy as ever. It's a paradox, according to former Gallup researcher Marcus Buckingham, author of Find Your Strongest Life, What the Happiest and Most Successful Women Do Differently.
Men's level of daily happiness has risen ever so slightly over the last 40 years. Not in a way that suggests something that dramatic has happened to them, but it seems to be more a function of the fact that America has become slightly more prosperous over the last 40 years, and there is a slight relationship, although money can't buy happiness, there's a slight relationship between prosperity and daily life happiness. So overall, men are slightly happier than they were 40 years ago. Women, in contrast, and despite all of the advances that we're hearing about these days, about advances in education and power and influence, women actually have gone in the opposite direction. They are now less happy than they were 40 years ago, and they are now less happy than men.
This is puzzling because it's happening in a period where what we've seen is a shift towards women in terms of legal rights and opportunities.
Betsy Stevenson is assistant professor of business and public policy at the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania and co-author of an influential study pointing out the paradox.
Declines for women's happiness relative to men are occurring among all the different groups that we look at. So it doesn't matter how old you are. We see these declines occurring among teenage girls and among elderly women and among prime age women, among women of all different ages. We don't see any discernible differences in their decline in happiness relative to men of their same age. Similarly, if we look across marital statuses, the relative decline is similar for married women as for divorced women, as for never married women. Looking across women who work at home versus women who work in the marketplace, we see similar trends. Breaking this into people who have children, people who don't have children, again, we see similar trends. So what this tells us is that we can rule out simple explanations like, say, a rise in single parenthood or the rise in female employment as potential explanations for why women have become less happy.
And women aren't just a little less happy than they used to be. Buckingham says this drop compares to the level of unhappiness that people display when their livelihood is at risk.
It would be the same level of decrease as if their earning levels had dropped 30%. Or, to look at it another way, it's the same amount of unhappiness that you would see if women's level of unemployment over the same time period had risen by 10%. So it's as if you've got 10% more unemployed women, or as if their earning potential or their earning power had dropped 30%.
So what's going on? Stevenson says it's possible that women were never that happy in the first place, but back in the 60s and 70s didn't feel free to say so.
Of course, it could be that the women's movement told women to be more honest about their feelings, and what we could have seen is that in the 70s, women were inflating their happiness, and what we've been seeing is women becoming more honest and describing their feelings, and so like a long, slow deflation in self-reports. It could also be a change in expectations. So it could have been that over the last 35 years, each year women have grown to expect more, and their realized lives may not have kept up with their expectations.
It's important to note that people's definition of happiness changes over time as well. A study at Stanford University finds that older people associate happiness with feeling peaceful and connected to others. Younger people define happiness as excitement. But today, younger women may be crowding excitement out of their lives. Surveys of high school senior girls have asked them to rate the importance of various aspects of their lives.
What we see is that everything's becoming more important to these girls. They're just circling higher and higher numbers in every single domain, or in most of the domains. And so we see things like being successful in their line of work has become more important over time, both absolutely and relative to men, or relative to teenage boys of the same age. Having lots of money has become more important to them, being able to find steady work, having strong friendships, making a contribution to society, being a leader in their community, giving their children better opportunities, staying close to their parents and relatives. These are a lot of areas they're putting demands on themselves. And then when they're asked how satisfied they are with various aspects of their life, the one area in which they consistently are telling us they've become less satisfied is time for doing things that they want to do, the way they're spending their leisure time, simply having fun.
Stevenson says teenage girls are crowding out time to just hang out in order to meet other goals. And in that respect, they've been successful.
Girls are just, frankly, triumphing over boys. You know, we see the gender college ratio is 60% female. And even once we get the girls into college, they're outperforming the smaller number of boys who show up to compete with them. Girls are doing tremendously well in many domains. And yet what they're telling us that they're paying a price. And this price is coming from not having time left over for fun. It's worth asking, is this a smart thing that they're doing? Are they making investments that are really going to pay off so that they're going to have the kind of life they want? Or do we need to figure out how to rebalance their lives so that they can achieve without burning out at a tender young age?
So could more choices for women, one of the flagship achievements of the women's movement, often result in burnout and unhappiness rather than fulfillment?
Economists typically lean towards believing that more choices makes you better off because you can always choose the bundle you had before. Now, there are some psychologists who argue that choice can be overwhelming and that we prefer to limit our choices. As women have these many different domains in their lives that have increased in terms of importance, it may be that that's overwhelmed them in a way that's made them less happy. It used to be that women, you know, when they were answering the question, how happy are you, they thought about, well, how happy am I with my children and my marriage? It might have been easier for them to excel in that one domain. Now women today might think, well, how happy am I with my family, but also how happy am I in my career? How happy am I with my friends? And it may be harder for them to achieve that same level of satisfaction across the three different areas.
Women do have an awful lot more domains in which they're supposed to excel than men. And certainly that puts a pressure on a woman to figure out, where am I going to choose to be most successful? Can I be, and the old cliche says, you know, you can be a mom, you can be a great employee, you can be a great wife, you just can't be every one of those all the time. You have to pick two out of three. I'm not sure that's entirely true, and we studied all the women who had bucked that trend, and who, many of whom, by the way, were incredibly successful executives and great wives and had kids and were great moms and happy in their role as moms. So it's obviously possible to make choices so that life strengthens you rather than breaks you down, but I think I would agree that the sheer number of responsibilities on a woman today, I think, puts the burden on the individual to figure that out.
But when they don't excel in all those roles, Buckingham says personality profiles show that women are usually harder on themselves than men are, and that can create plenty of unhappiness.
If you ask men, which do you think will make you most successful in life, building on your strengths as a person or fixing your weaknesses, men are split 50-50. Whereas 73% of women say fix my weaknesses and 27% say build on my strengths. Well, if your predisposition to be successful is to find out what you're flawed in or what you're not doing well and then really focus on that, you find that your entire attention gets focused on those things where you're struggling, and therefore your life becomes something where you're really acutely aware of everything you're not doing well. And if that's your approach to life, find what your flaws are and fix them. Then you're going to have a life in which you really become an expert in everything that you're not doing well. That's not a recipe for a very happy life.
As women have picked up additional roles, they've also picked up financial responsibilities, easing some of that burden for many men. In 40% of America's families, a woman is the primary breadwinner, something that was obviously much less common 40 years ago. So some experts have wondered who really was the winner of the women's movement.
It is possible that men have benefited tremendously from these new roles for women, and that they may have benefited even more than women have. You know, the idea that women have taken over, say, some of the responsibility for providing financially for their families, some of the stress of providing financially for their families, we might, you know, ask what type of stresses or responsibilities did men then take on? And women traditionally bore the responsibility for the well-being of the members of the family. We have to ask, have men taken on an equivalent share of those stresses? And that's certainly something that people have pointed to and said maybe this is part of the problem, that men have gained with women taking on some of their stresses and haven't lost because they haven't been taking on as many of the traditional female stresses.
Combine their tendency for self-criticism with overwhelming choice, and Buckingham says it can present women with a dilemma where they question their basic life choices in a way that men don't.
If your life begins with the question, which part of myself must I cut out? If that's how you start with life, then that's a really debilitating question because you start wondering that you're not cutting out enough or that the things that you've cut out aren't the right things, that you focus too much in your career and not enough on your kids, or vice versa. That you sacrificed your earning power because you chose to take 3 or 4 years off after you've had your kids, and then you'll feel guilty that maybe you shouldn't have done, or you turned down a promotion that you maybe should have gone for. If your beginning point in life is which part of myself should I cut out, that leads to a laundry list of unhealthy emotions.
Betsy Stevenson says she intellectually understood all of this after doing her provocative research, but she was still unprepared for how challenging it would be to balance work and family when her baby daughter arrived.
I feel stressed about work, and when I'm actually working, I feel stressed that I'm not spending time with my child, and I think that that's something that is very hard for people to adjust to and to figure out how they want to make those decisions.
Buckingham advises in his book that balance isn't what women or anyone should try to achieve for true happiness.
It not only sets you up for failure, because let's face it, balance is nigh on impossible to achieve. There's one tiny moment where you've got everything balanced, and in every other moment you're sloshing or tilting one way or another. But more to the point, even if you did achieve it, it wouldn't necessarily be that fulfilling for you anyway. There's nothing particularly fulfilling about balance. What's fulfilling is having a life in which the moments that you've targeted, the moments that you've paid attention to, and that you've deliberately built into your life, invigorate you. If you can identify what those moments are as a wife, or as an employee, or as a mother, and then deliberately imbalance your life toward those moments, then you find that your life becomes fuller. It might not look on the surface as though it's a balanced life. You're not spending the same amount of time and attention on every single aspect of your life, but it is a full life, and so inside, for you, it may feel actually more balanced.
However, Stevenson says it's not just the difficulty in meeting one's own expectations that makes people unhappy. It's also the failure of society to meet expectations. And when someone's powerless to do anything about her situation, it's a recipe for dissatisfaction. You can hear podcasts of our stories and find out more about our guests and their books on our website, radiohealthjournal.net. I'm Reed Pence.
Coming up, cosmetic limb lengthening, when Radio Health Journal continues.
Healthcare warning. National Health Plan sets daily limits. Uninsured Americans are urged to call now for immediate acceptance and a free 30-day trial. If you're among the 47 million uninsured, you are risking your health. The New York Times, Harvard, and the American Cancer Society state having no insurance leads to poor health and lack of early detection of potentially fatal conditions. Don't let the high cost of insurance prevent you from having quality health care. Limited registration is open for a low-cost health plan. All are accepted, regardless of age, medical condition, income, or residency. Call now for a 30-day free trial. Save 10 to 60% on doctors, hospitals, prescriptions, and more. Only 650 registrations will be accepted daily, so call now. Call 800-917-8476. Start protecting your family. Call now for details. There's no obligation. Call 800-917-8476. That's 800-917-8476.
When Joe Sutton stopped growing late in his teens, he made it to only an even 5 feet. But then at age 26, he experienced a growth spurt that added 3 inches to his height in about 3 months. But it didn't come naturally. He did it by undergoing an excruciatingly painful process called limb lengthening.
Limb lengthening is the process of making a leg or arm longer.
Dr. Dror Paley is director of the Paley Advanced Limb Lengthening Institute at St. Mary's Hospital in West Palm Beach, Florida.
We use a device which can either be, the most common is an external device which bolts onto the limb from the outside. It's attached to kind of an external scaffold with pins that screw into the bone. You cut the bone, and then by adjusting this external device several times a day, you slowly pull the bone apart. The bone, being a living substance, makes new bone to repair itself. And as long as you go very slowly, that repair process can keep up, and you end up with the bone filling up the gap that's created by the break being pulled apart.
Now, that may bring to mind gruesome images of the rack used in torture chambers of old. But in fact, limb lengthening stretches the body at an infinitesimal rate of 1 millimeter a day. And rather than being torture, highly motivated, successful men of short stature will pay as much as $80,000 to put themselves through this ordeal. The process was discovered in the 1950s in the Soviet Union. It's mostly used to treat patients with congenital deformities, such as crooked or uneven limbs. In fact, nearly 95% of all limb lengthening procedures done in the United States are for reasons other than simply short stature.
In those patients, we are able to do lengthenings safely between 2 and 3 inches.
Dr. Robert Rosbrook is medical director of the Institute for Limb Lengthening and Reconstruction at the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York City.
I tell people that you really have to take off 6 months from life. If they're a student, they need to take a semester off from school. If they're in a job, they're not going to be able to travel to and from work for a period of 6 months. And they're in a wheelchair. So they're in a wheelchair and they're able to take a few steps here and there.
The most painful part of this process isn't the bones being cut and grown together again. It's the constant pulling on the muscles and tendons, like bending down to touch your toes. Now imagine holding that stretch for 6 months. And even after going through all of this, the results are not guaranteed.
The risks are the bone not healing, the muscles getting tight, and needing further surgery then to heal the bone, to lengthen muscles and tendons, getting nerve injuries, things like that. This procedure is a potentially very dangerous procedure. It can affect your ability to walk, run, do sports. I recommend against it in every case that somebody wants to do it for cosmetic reasons. It's no facelift, let me put it that way. And it's a very lengthy thing to go through. You know, you wake up from surgery, you're no longer than you were when you went to sleep. The lengthening process actually occurs after surgery. It's a very gradual thing. And furthermore, it's very expensive.
So why would anyone go through with limb lengthening just to gain a few inches? Well, to be average, or at least a little closer to it. According to studies, the average range of adult male height in the United States is between 5 feet 5 inches and 5 feet 10 inches.
They have what we call short stature dysphoria. They're very, very unhappy with their short stature. They think about it constantly. It affects their self-image and it affects their happiness in a very significant way.
But not every short man agrees that adding a few extra inches in height will lead to true happiness.
Men who want to go through limb lengthening feel that it will give them either extra confidence or an appearance edge in the workplace or what have you. I just think that they're looking in the wrong place.
Paul Stephen Miller is a professor at the University of Washington School of Law in Seattle and the former commissioner of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. He also happens to be 4 feet 5 inches tall.
People can be happy or sad or satisfied or dissatisfied with their lives for many reasons, and sometimes height becomes the scapegoat. There is natural variation among all people, and people, I think, need to accept that.
But not every man who is short does accept it. And even Miller admits discrimination exists.
There have been studies that show that shorter men have a harder time in the workplace than taller men.
And for some short men, that's reason enough to consider limb lengthening.
Despite dissuading people and despite what people have to go through, the good thing is that in the hands of very experienced professionals, the results are very satisfying. Patients don't come back and say, I wish I'd never done this. They're really quite happy with it. They get the inches they want. They maintain their function. They end up normal.
In an ideal world, perhaps normal would include the unaverage height or shape. But for now, it seems our obsession with makeovers and being above average will continue to be the norm. Our writer this week is Polly Hansen. Our production director is Joe Bartosz. I'm Nancy Benson.
Before we continue this week, we have one clarification. A few weeks ago, in a story on treating teenage depression, we noted that 4 antidepressants had been approved for teen use. To be more correct, the antidepressants Zoloft and Celexa have been approved to treat only obsessive-compulsive disorder in teens. Some doctors prescribe those two drugs for depression in teenagers, but that's an off-label use. Prozac and Lexapro are the only drugs specifically indicated for teens with major depressive disorder.
Experts say they're seeing a growing number of some complications during pregnancies in the U.S., a factor they say is because of the growing number of older mothers and mothers-to-be who are obese. I'm Mimi Tompkins, and this is A Healthier World, exploring issues of global health, brought to you by Pfizer. Coming up, an increase in the number of cesarean sections.
At Pfizer, we're dedicated to applying innovative science to improve world health. That means battling the world's most serious diseases, cancer, HIV/AIDS, heart disease. But these innovations must be available to more patients around the world. We're providing savings on our medicines to those most in need, and we are helping expand prescription coverage to more people across the U.S. Find out how we're working together for a healthier world. Visit www.pfizer.com.
A study in the journal Obstetrics and Gynecology shows that the overall rate of complications during pregnancy has remained steady for the past 15 years. But doctors are seeing more women with pre-existing conditions such as high blood pressure or diabetes. They believe this is because there are more obese and older women giving birth. High blood pressure and diabetes are both linked to these groups of women. About 29% of women suffer from some kind of complication with childbirth. That figure has held steady since 1993. But the number of women with pre-existing medical conditions has risen from about 4% to 5%. Doctors say, in particular, cases of hypertension are rising. More women are also receiving cesarean deliveries. That amount has climbed from about 22% to 28%. Officials say this could be linked to the older age of mothers and women with chronic diseases, which put the mother more at risk. Trying to prevent these diseases is a way of making women and their pregnancies healthier. I'm Mimi Tompkins.
Medical notes this week. Sleepy drivers may be even more common than we think. A survey from the National Sleep Foundation finds that more than a quarter of people drive while sleepy at least once a month, and more than half of drivers have driven while drowsy at some point in the last year. 1% of drivers admit they've either had a crash or nearly had one because they drove while sleepy. Experts say in those cases, it's a failed case of people trying to will themselves to stay awake. Infant mortality figures are out, and the United States ranks 30th compared to other countries. The problem is the high rate of premature deliveries in the U.S., a result of a lack of access to health care for many pregnant women. Vaccines with mercury have been accused of possibly causing autism. But now a study in the journal Environmental Health Perspectives finds that blood mercury levels in autistic children are no different than in normal children. In fact, because they often eat less fish, autistic children reportedly had lower levels of blood mercury than normal kids. And finally, scientists have discovered a series of 5 specific genes which increase the risk you'll get a potbelly. A study in the Journal of Nutrition shows that having any of the 5 genes doubles the risk of fat going to the abdomen, and having more than one of the genes multiplies the risk. However, researchers say people with these defective genes are not doomed to go to pot if they exercise and watch their diets. And that's Medical Notes this week. More in a moment.
Investing in bonds involves risk, including the possible loss of principal. Attention investors, does the recent market uncertainty leave you frustrated? If the answer is yes, then call Hanyon & Walsh to see how municipal bonds may help. Call right now and get a free bond guide that explains how tax-free municipal bonds can benefit you. This free guide shows you how municipal bonds can help you achieve long-term income goals. With the recent market uncertainty, municipal bonds are what many investors turn to in a challenging economy. If you have $10,000 or more to invest, call now to get your free bond guide. Call 1-877-596-4242. Find out about federally tax-free bonds yielding 5% or more. Call 1-877-596-4242. Hengen & Walsh Inc. is a member of FINRA and SIPC. Call now for your free bond guide. Call 1-877-596-4242. That's 1-877-596-4242.
Are you worried about your credit card debt, sky-high interest rates, having trouble making the monthly minimums? We're Credit Card Relief. We've helped thousands of people become debt-free in months instead of years, all while saving thousands of dollars. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-909-9595. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief, 866-909-9595. 866-909-9595.
And that's Radio Health Journal for this week. This program is a production of MediaTrax Communications. You can find us online at radiohealthjournal.net with podcasts of our stories, information about our guests, and the latest medical news updated every day. Join us again next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.